Oh, it's a dirty job, but somebody's got to do it. Hey there, friends and family of Werder Bremen. Welcome to the live Werder Bremen post-game show. Again, it remains chaos, both on the show and, I guess, on the field. So welcome and thanks for joining us. We do the show every Sunday after the league matches are done, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So if you are listening to this on the podcast, which again is available, I think on almost every platform you can find us, so whichever one you prefer. Come join us on Sunday if you got the time. We go live. You can send chats in if you wish. You can, when sometimes we have a call-in show or something like that, you can call in. So today we got Le Miserable is with
Miserable.
Us. I'm not going to try and... Miserable.
Miserable.
And we'll get there. And Salty is joining us. Adunisi is here. Brewer's with us. That soccer guy. And the voice you're hearing right now is Christian, the birthday boy. And hey. You must be like, I don't know. This new mic is a whole new lease on life. Like, we can literally hear you breathing at this point in time. It's amazing.
How it's is like my last gasps of life leaving my body. I'm fucking dying.
So when does the birthday start? Is it actually today or is it?
No, it's actually today. We went out last night though, because obviously today's a Sunday and we're all adults, relatively speaking, all responsible adults. So going out on a Sunday, you know, into Monday probably wouldn't work so well. Plus, I think I needed another day off to recuperate, to be completely honest.
Well, and then was St. Paddy's Day stuff happening at the bars and stuff? So green beer and all that, or did I lose you, Christian?
Hold on a second. Nope. Don't tell me. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay. I don't know what happened there. God damn it. This is the last shit I need right now. I would assume so. We didn't really do any of that. We went to a Japanese izakaya place and then went to a place called Standard Time, which is basically a club, for lack of a better word, a venue.
Ian, along with everybody else, is probably they're trying to figure out if they just had a stroke when we can. I asked a question; it was just dead airspace, and we were all hoping and praying that you hadn't just fallen off, and that was it.
He was last heard on this final episode of It's Not Easy Being Green. You can attribute my death to the pains and sorrows of Ole Werner being our coach. Week in, week out. You did this to me. You did this to me. Come back and haunt them.
Well, we also welcome Dustin to the live program. Again, thanks for joining us. I think it's St. Paddy's Day today. I don't ever keep up on this, but I am still wearing my green What It Do t-shirt. So, for all good things and propriety, What It Do, Christian?
What It Motherfucking Do.
And I think there's still King Ian can maybe pop it into the chat. I think there's still a sale going on at the store there, so you can get your green What It Do t-shirt. And maybe it's on sale until tomorrow. So hurry. Fill our coffers, would you? You can go and find all kinds of other stuff like the shop there on at our Linktree, which is linktree.com/VerderNA. linktr.ee/VerderNA. If you want to get in touch with Christian outside of the show, on Twitter at SVWOMYTFC, just create a Twitter handle and just go and bug him because he really likes that. He likes arguing with people on Twitter.
Makes my fucking day, let me tell you. Jesus Christ.
I don't know. You're attracting them like a lightning rod this last week. Well done.
Oh, man. I can't help myself. Like, I even found myself on Instagram yesterday arguing with fucking halfwits. I know literally as I'm writing something that I'm going to regret writing something, but I just.
You just went out again. Is there like
fucking
a mute
hell?
You're a mute
Jesus Christ. No, man. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
weird. You know what it is? Okay, this is the strangest thing is I have to keep, like, I can't, whatever. My phone's just a fucking irritating piece of shit. I don't even know what's going on anymore. Anyways. Let's move on.
Another brilliant patch of radio for you folks.
Yeah. You're welcome, people. We care a lot. It's a dirty job and somebody's got to do it. Yeah, weather fluctuations. Exactly.
All right, well, we'll get a move on here. Another game, another loss, and another opportunity to look back and realize that without the blip in good form at the beginning of the year, Werder would be in serious trouble. So we can thank our lucky stars that we were, in fact, lucky during the games against Bayern and Freiburg, because nothing we have seen in the last 4 weeks indicate that this team has developed in any way, shape, or form. In fact, this last game should level yet another cudgel across the head of Ole Werner with respect to what the hell he's trying to develop here at all. We constantly hear that the team needs to take the next step and that the team is developing their processes, that we're doing some of the things well, but just not executing, etc., etc. What acclaim and accolades Werner was able to gather after the start of the Rückrunde need to be either summarily dismissed or countered. The puff pieces and adulation received now need to turn into criticism and accountability. The games against bottom dwellers and promotion teams proved this club isn't ready to take the next step, at least under current leadership. And the last three games have rebuffed the idea that this team is able to play up to when the opportunity calls for it. We are in no man's land, going nowhere, with few prospects and dwindling hope. If you haven't jumped on the Ole out train, there are still seats available, and after yesterday's display, they should be filling out soon. In 2.5 years, this recent set of games has not shown that he has the capacity, capability, or credibility to take this team to the next level. Now, I know that might sound a little bit harsh, and a guy probably shouldn't be so angry about it, but fuck him.
Amen.
Christian.
No, it's true.
Your thoughts,
man,
on the game.
It's absolutely true. I think Dustin pointed out that he now has less points per average game or something like that. Less points per game than Floco. I mean, that should fucking say it all, shouldn't it? Yeah, exactly. Like Ian said, he got us promoted though. You know? Fucking hell. Yeah. I was in absolute agony yesterday morning. I had I get a migraine maybe once or twice a year, and yesterday was the day, which didn't make the game that much, you know, more enticing, I guess, for lack of a better word. So I watched the first half, and then the second half, I just couldn't do it. I think I like passed out cold, and then I tried to start watching the second half again today, but I already knew the score. We're just going through the motions at this point. You know what I mean? And I know you and I had a conversation about this just before the show. I was kind of like, do we even need to do ups and downs? Because I feel like I'm just repeating myself in week in and week out. And you actually had a really good point. You know, you said, look, we need to continue to be a voice of dissent. I guess maybe not as articulate as that. But you essentially said we need to be the voice of dissent and continue to show our disdain for how this club is currently being run, both with Ole Werner and with the front office, who continues to empower him and allow him to create the dreck that we've seen on the field more often than not in the last 2 years. I would love to know whether this is actually starting, like, if where people are on this. Obviously, there's no way to gauge this. It's all wild speculation, because I'll go on Twitter, which Jesus Christ is just a fucking nightmare.
Where good ideas go to die.
Yeah, seriously. And just some of the fucking brainless takes, you know what I mean? It's incredible. Like I got in an argument about whether, you know, if Dinkshi doesn't come, it's both Bauman and Ole Werner's fault. And some guy's like, I forget what he said, something like stupid. I've said, okay, well, I guess Dinkshi just got to Heidenheim himself and has been playing really well. You know, that's all Dingshi that he made it there. It wasn't because Ole Werner sent him on a fucking loan with a price tag of $5 million, which anybody can pay now. You know, it's simply because Dingshi made it happen. You know what I mean? And Dingshi didn't leave because, you know, Werner didn't want to fucking play him while he's there. You know? Yeah, the whole thing just fucking sucks.
Yeah, facts are hard for some people.
Yeah, no shit. Fucking hell.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I've got some ups and downs, and whether did you wind up doing any, or are you just going to jump on the back of mine?
Oh yeah, no, I'm going to jump on the back of yours. I didn't even bother to try. I don't even feel like I watched the game like I did, but I don't think I paid enough attention to it to really put together any ups and all downs. I feel like I'll be having the same fucking downs as I did for the last 3 weeks. You know, I've just been a lazy fuck this week. You know what? It's my birthday, so fuck you guys.
Oh, what a pussy hole. What kind of horseshit is that? All right. Well, we'll start with some ups. All right. My first up is Skelly Alvero. I think he's showing us that he has the potential to be a real option for us in the midfield. I struggle because his current market value is going to end up likely being more than our club should be looking to spend. I believe his purchase option, somebody can correct me, I think it's six or north of 6 million, seven maybe.
I think it's six. I might be wrong.
You know, there were moments where both he and Keita showed that, you know, a midfielder who's good with the ball at their feet and has a decent pass could really be a boost for our midfield. So I felt that Skelly did a really good job of showcasing his skills and talents in the limited time that was afforded him. That was my first up. Any thoughts on that, Christian?
Yeah.
You didn't watch the second half.
I didn't watch the game. Yeah, I watched maybe like 10, 15 minutes of the second half. But, you know, just to jump on that. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's brilliant that we have him, but he's never going to get played because we have the likes of Christian Gross and fucking Leo. Now, I'm curious to see whether that actually in this upcoming game, I wouldn't be shocked if he actually did start. And probably should have started sometime sooner or at least gotten more time than he has. But yeah, who knows, man? I don't think we would have taken him on if we couldn't afford to buy him. I'll say that as well. I don't think that we would waste time, roster space. You know what? Not with Jans. Honestly, not with Jans. If it was Fritz and Baumann, abso-fucking-lutely, in a heartbeat. But with Jans, I don't think he'd waste his time with that. You know what I mean?
Your lips to God's ears. I'm going to make an assumption that that price tag is probably, I know people will argue with me on that, but it's probably a little steep for a club of our stature. But I mean, who knows? Maybe there's some fancy footwork to be done there. Yeah. And we welcome Paul to the show. My next up that I had, and believe me, folks, that we I'm stretching here. I felt that Veljković had a reasonable game given his return from injury. I think the last game he played was in December. And they, you know, right back into 90 plus minutes, which is always amazing that Veljković can sit on the pine for that long or on the mend for that long, come back and play 90 minutes. But Keita needs to be, you know, absolutely not even kid gloves. You know, it's almost like they got what are those contraptions like the queens of old or kings of old? They had like the four guys carrying them. Yeah. You know, it's almost
like a chair, or like a throne they sit on with the seriously.
A Pope mobile.
Yeah. Bulletproof glass. It's like four sheets thick. Bubble boy inside.
Exactly.
Correct. Yeah. God forbid he catches anything else.
I felt that that he made a couple of really good stops on defense and kind of was basically the only one really holding the fort as both the fellas on either side of him had a pretty poor game. And the last up that I had is that the live chat remains one of the best uses of my time during a poor game. I mean, I'm fairly certain this game, I spent more time laughing and scrolling on the live chat than I did watching what was happening on the field. And that's both an endorsement to hang out with us when the game goes live, but also an indictment on a team that plays unreal dull football.
Yeah. And poorly at that. It's not even being executed well. Like, I would be fine if we were boring and winning. We're not even winning. We're just boring and losing. Like, what the fuck is that about?
the worst of both worlds.
Yeah, we're seriously.
Order Brayman. Yeah. All right. We'll move to a couple of things that that sucked. But the first one is yellow card problems. So yellow cards were handed out to Leinen, Visor, and Stier. And all three players are going to miss the next game against Wolfsburg. With the given injury situation on the back line, it is quite possible we will see a back three similar to yesterday, with the wing back positions being filled by Agu on the right and Demar on the left. And the midfield is where things are going to get interesting. And we do have a question for you later on this, Christian, so I won't get too far into this. What Werner is going to choose to do, given his proclivity for consistency, you know, will he be forced into a midfield trio that hasn't been fielded before? Or maybe if it has, it hasn't been fielded long together. The absence of Leinen and Stier leads one to think that he's probably going to place Gross on the six in favor of Skelly. And then it's a question of whether his favoritism extends to have Schmid and Bittencourt up top, or if Skelly and Keita make it into the conversation. So don't get into it yet, Christian, because there's a question for you coming on that one.
Yeah, fair enough.
All right. The next thing that I thought sucked was I want Voltomat to succeed, but he is either being utilized incorrectly or he isn't able to perform at this level just yet.
Yeah.
Which is kind of odd to say. Because if I compare him in this game against Dukes, who would be considered a similar striker, I mean, both of them like to drop into the midfield. Both are kind of credited with linking the ball. Both like to participate in the setup game. The stats heavily favor Voltomat's performance, with the exception of the corner that was delivered by Dukes to give him an assist. Voltomat actually outperformed Dukes in the following categories: dribbles, aerials won, tackles, and key passes. You know, Dukes had more shots, whoop-de-doo for Dukes. He blocked a shot and was 1% higher in his passing percentage. But yeah, in everywhere else on the field, Voltomat outperformed him. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, Christian, about Voltomat. Is he actually built for this league? Can he actually do this? Are we just not utilizing him right?
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's a tough call because I've kind of, you know, with the short amount of time I was paying attention to it yesterday, I didn't really see much from him that was wildly impressive. Now, to be fair, the whole team was shit. Yeah. You know what I mean? It was a pretty bad team, a bad game I don't know. I don't want to give up on him quite yet, to be completely honest, just because so many people are so high on him. So there has to be something there. You know what I mean? And also, I really like the idea of him and Skelly playing together. So somebody can make a meme of Twin Towers, which, by the way, for most people don't know, is a Slim Dunk and Waka Flocka album. Anyways, I digress. I really don't know. But also, we also know that Ole just is not a very good coach at this point. So, I mean, it could be that Voltomat really is good and we're just not seeing it because of the coaching, you know? I don't know. I still want to give him some time before I give up on him, to be completely honest.
Well, I've just got to say, welcome to the live show, Jabba the Butt. Thanks for that.
Beautiful.
Glad I got to say that on air. but I gotta say the sympathy and empathy that comes from our listeners. Christian is literally on his last legs, barely breathing, barely staying alive.
Here. Trying so hard. Trying so hard.
Yeah, and the commentary in the chat.
Stop breathing so hard.
Hold your breath. I like to say, hold your breath, but don't die.
Yeah. I can smell you from here. All sorts of cruel comments.
Oh, man.
It's the shit I have to put up with.
All right. The last thing that I thought sucked was that the game plan, I believe, left Njinma isolated with no support and further left our midfield isolated with no support. So the concept, I think, was okay in a sense, you know, going with a 3-4-3, but you know, Dukes and Voltimad kind of using them to link up the midfield and defense. And then, you know, hopefully a fast paced Njinma would kind of break loose on the back line. But that didn't really happen. You know, on the day, Njinma was basically invisible, which can either be attributed to a poor day at the office, the game plan, you know, or both. Right. But with the team only creating one big chance on the game, and there was also a poor call by the ref that stymied a good opportunity for Njinma, the team overall created only an XG of only 0.74. And I think it's safe to say that something was amiss. You know, Njinma remains our best striker, creating goal scoring opportunities based on his personal XG over 90 minutes. You know, but yesterday he was basically made to be invisible. And a part of that was, again, a really good defensive play by Union Berlin, but also the way we approached the game really didn't help him out, especially when Berlin started to compact and play defensively. It was impossible for us to gain entrance into the middle of the field, and then we were just crossing the ball, and we do that so poorly. It would be a miracle that anybody, especially the strikers we have, that I don't know how many headed goals we have. I'm pretty sure, like, and I think Schmid has one of them, which I think gives you an idea how poor we are at it. But, you know, we resorted to crosses. It was ineffective. We didn't play to Njinma's strengths. And then especially talking about the midfield, because we had, because we didn't replace Schmid with a midfielder, but instead with Voltimad, Union were able to have, they actually have a creative 10. I think Aronson, is that right?
Oh, man. Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, that's right.
Yeah, Aronson. So they were creating odd numbers in our midfield all game long and just running us absolutely ragged. And it wasn't addressed because Voltimad isn't a midfielder. I don't care how you want to slice it. It's almost, my God, it feels like we're having the fucking JoJo Egestein conversation again, you know? A striker that they're just going to force right. to play in the midfield, right?
And that's always been a red flag to me, is a coach who refuses to play to players' strengths and tries to squeeze a square peg in a round hole. You know what I mean? Like, that shit's insane to me. What the fuck? I feel like Werner was reading, I guess, different tweets and on the forums where people were like, he's more suited to be a 10. Nah, he's not. He's like a center forward, man. You know, I don't know. What does it matter anymore? I give up.
Well, let's get into a few other topics here that we
got. Oh, I got one down, actually. I want to say the ref. Now, it didn't decide the game. We decided the game. But man, oh man, did that guy just make it fucking... Like, it's unbearable when you have a ref like that. And it does literally ruin the game. Takes all the fun out of it. Just calls that don't make any fucking sense. Non-calls that don't make any fucking sense. Zero consistency, you know?
Absolutely. Officiating was shit. Like, there was, especially the offside that wasn't called by either the referee or VAR.
Yeah.
The second goal that was scored?
Just
it's pretty bloody obvious. Anybody can look at that and see, right?
Yeah.
And the guy was handing out yellow cards like it was a box of Oreos. Everybody gets one.
Yeah.
Right. I think even at the end of the game, Fritz got one because kind of one of those things.
Why not?
Like, I mean, who gives a crap, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, what was that? That Seinfeld where they're on Hernandez, nice game, pretty boy. I think it was something like that where Fritz kind of just told him that blew a call or did a piss poor job. And yeah, the ref just pulled out a yellow card. You criticize me? That's a yellow.
Insolence will not be tolerated. You know, I would love to know. I know, like, maybe in the past, Ian's kind of dug up some history on these guys to find out what the carding frequency is. And I'm willing to bet this guy is one of those assholes that just like fucking tosses them willy nilly all over the field for nothing. You know what I mean? Or like everything always.
I can tell you right now, this guy has done 11 Bundesliga games. He gives out 4.3 yellows per game. So he really got excited this last game. Yeah.
Yeah. No shit. It's still 4.3 is still a lot of fucking yellows. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Well, and he also, most of his games, he sees approximately 25 fouls per game, which means that he's not keeping control of the game at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, moving on. I'm the weirdo that keeps tabs on refs.
I love it, man. It's a hit list.
Just petty. I'm just petty.
Yeah. Hey, man.
So, not last week, maybe it was last week or the week before, we were kind of talking about the interview that happened with Ole Werner on Twitch. And we went through a couple of his responses, got your reaction to it, Christian. I wanted to finish that off because there were still a few comments from him that I wanted to go over. Mm. And you're probably just about in the right headspace and ripe enough to speak to it. So again, a big thanks to Sooner and Michael, who sent the interpretations for these. So here we go, Christian. So he was asked about how seldom he subs. Apparently, it's the second lowest sub rate in the league, which Ole Werner responded first by smiling and then asking if there really are stats for sub rate.
Yes, Ole, they fucking track everything. Come on, man. Kind of fucking amateur are you? I hope that was a joke on his part and not sincere. Sorry. Yeah, honestly, though, I wouldn't be shocked. I would not be shocked.
So he responded with the same thing about his role as a trainer is to get points, et cetera, et cetera. The translated quote is, I should just end it there. I don't think about my ideas with subs.
Say, that's evident. Yeah, that's very fucking evident.
I don't think about my ideas with subs as it relates to other teams. I just concentrate on my team and what I think we need. Then he said we basically have no players who haven't played a part in what we're doing. He closed with, I have to do what I think is right for the club, and at the end of the day, every trainer has to do that for their teams. There are many ways
no shit.
Can be successful. Off you go, Christian.
It's just a bunch of empty platitudes. It's literally just like insert answer here. Copy, paste.
Yeah, it's like listening to a presidential candidacy.
I promise to do a good job and give the people what they want. There you go. Yeah, it is about getting fucking points. And have you noticed that you've not been getting points? So maybe consider doing some shit differently, my friend. You have 5 subs. Why wait till the end of the game? If shit isn't working, it's not going to fix itself. You know, on occasion it does, which is where, unfortunately, I think he feels validated by not making subs. Like, he's like, if I stick to it long enough, something's going to work. So, like, Duke starting every fucking game, never getting subbed off, no matter how shitty he is. So we'll say he goes like 7 games playing like garbage, but on that 7th game, he fucking scores a cracker of a goal. And he's like, perfect, I'll just keep him in the next 7 games, regardless of how well or bad he plays. You know what I mean? And it's just that, like, weird bit of validation. Blind to fucking everything else that's happening, but he just needs to make sure, you know, as they say, a broken clock is right twice a day. So he just keeps waiting for it to be right. And he's like, oh, there we go. And there we go. Now we got to wait another fucking 12 hours. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I hear you loud and clear. It is true that there are many ways a team can be successful. So that's true. I think it's also true that it isn't necessarily necessary to compare things like your sub rate versus other teams.
Sure.
And it's probably true that the majority of the players on this team have contributed in some way to Werder's success this season.
Right? Or lack thereof.
I mean, if there was an area of all of this to take kind of umbrage with, it would be, you know, why those who have proven to provide real benefit for Werder have seen less time than those who seem to be considered regular starters but aren't offering what, you know. Yeah, Jinma is of course, the first example that I bring up. But, I mean, Schmid, why he had started 5 to 7 games before his suspension is a question that I think needs to be answered.
Seriously.
You know, it's stuff like that. I think a question or a topic like this comes more from a place where the outside world seems to see some potential for impact or sees value sitting on the bench, you know, and can't come to grips with the idea that they aren't being utilized in a more assertive manner. You know, so I don't know. I don't, the way he answered the question is, like you said, I think it's pretty dismissive. I don't think it really.
There's no depth to it. There's no depth to it. You know what I mean?
Like, okay. So,
yeah.
Yes. So he was asked about how important it is to stand by your ideas with tactics and formation when sometimes it means relying on players who don't really match the profile you might need to implement tactics. He said it's important in most situations to stay consistent rather than change systems or formations at the time, because then the players won't be able to truly become consistent with any sort of ideas that we want to implement. The most important thing is that we have a long-term development as a team, and that's the main goal. We just played a match on the weekend where Christian Gross came in after not playing for a very long time. This obviously was done prior to this last game, and he did a good job. Why? Because he's experienced, but also because the players playing around him have a clear understanding of what they're doing. Malatini comes in, he doesn't even speak the language, hasn't been here long, but it also works because the players playing around him have a clear understanding of what they're doing. And I believe this is a more likely way to win games than switching up tactics and formations all the time because you are missing a couple of key players.
That just speaks to his inflexibility, right? It's he's stubborn. He likes to stick with what he has no matter what. And he's not interested in changing that regardless of the results. We know that he's not flexible with formations, or he doesn't want to try stuff out. He's scared of it, which is why he doesn't play the youth, right? This is just further proof of that.
Yeah. I mean, this goes back to the comment when we first were going through these things that he obviously is somebody that favors security and safety,
right? Yeah.
And this gives him that sense, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm guessing he's assuming, I'm guessing he's addressing some of the stuff that was floating around. You know, why don't we switch to a back four, you know, given how the center backs are injured. But even without that as a topic, like you said, I think it really does speak to the level of certainty and control and security that he's looking to see within the team. So it really is, I think, more of a philosophy of projected success. Will you be more successful making a switch, trying to inject some creativity and freedom into the system, or will you be more successful treading the well-worn paths through continuity and structure? And you know, I think on the surface, his the rationale when talking about, you know, Gross and Malatini, I think it makes sense,
sure. Right?
When you inject a new player into a system, it's to your advantage that everybody else knows what's going on.
Absolutely.
I'd also suggest that if you make no changes to your system, it becomes pretty well understood by the opposition. And unless you're a team like Bayern with the qualities of just enforcing your game plan on somebody,
it's predictable.
You know, yeah. We don't have this kind of luxury.
No.
I think it shows a distrust in his players' abilities to comprehend and understand a game plan, which I think is kind of sad. And you underscored this right off the bat. I think it fully establishes that his personality and coaching style is security, control.
Rigid. I don't see how that's going to work for us in the long run, especially when you're trying to develop youth. I mean, something else to take into consideration is I get keeping a system and doing the same thing over and over again if you are successful. Even then, everybody knows you've got to make minor changes here and there, right? Like, because Tuesday's not always going to be like every fucking the same every time. Tuesday's not always going to, you know, Wednesday's not going to be exactly like Tuesday. You're never going to have that sort of consistency. So you're going to have to make a change at some point in time, right? But he just won't do that. He's not interested in doing that. And it shows. And you know what the crazy part is, too, is we're not even being successful right now. And he's refusing you know what I mean? Like, that rigidity plus a lack of success is just insane to me. Like, what's the saying? Doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results.
Insanity.
You know? Insanity. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, and in all fairness, most of these interviews and everything else were when we were kind of on a bit of a high, having won a couple of different games against, you know, like you said, Bayern Munich and Freiburg, and that made everybody pay attention and go, ooh, you know, this guy might be the next big thing, right? And then all of a sudden, all these puff pieces came out about Werner and all of these, you know, these types of interviews happened. And now we're on the backside of, you know, what the last four or five games have been. Mm-hmm. And it really makes, you know, is anybody lining up to interview him now talking about how, you know, consistency is the route to victory?
Can we revisit this quote with him? So you mentioned, you know, four or five games ago that, you didn't really feel like you needed to change much. Do you still feel the same? Honestly, he probably would. He'd double down on it.
Oh,
I don't think, you know what I mean? Like, wouldn't shock me at all.
All right, last one, and this is the best one. Save the best for last. he was asked about how hard it is to find balance between your own ideas about how to play the game and solution-oriented work. I don't know necessarily what that quote, solution-oriented work, means. So he responded with, ideally, my ideas are successful and also appropriate for the players, that one feeds into the other. But on top of that, I feel like I'm a trainer who responds to the strengths of the players on my team more than seeks to mask our weaknesses as a team. I also try to look at what is realistic for us to achieve to get ready for this week, what ideas can really bring us something, and I love this, and what do the players understand, and what can they really comprehend? When asked about what the team can improve on in the coming months, he said the team is very good compared to the rest of the league at winning the ball in the midfield and in the final third, but they lack the precision, the ability to execute dangerous passes or dangerous shots.
So what do? You keep the striker in that's not doing anything. That's, you know,
yes.
That's, he says this is the problem, and then he refuses to change anything that might address the problem. And somebody wrote, solution-oriented work, where your plans differ from what you have. You must find solutions for it. That's how I read it. That's what Sooner said. Well, and we know that, once again, that would entail a certain amount of flexibility, to which he's not interested in doing in any capacity unless he's absolutely forced to. Solution-oriented work for him only happens when he's pressed, when he absolutely fucking has to.
Is he a sexier version of Felix Magath?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
more modern version. He doesn't have him running with bags of bricks on their back. Not yet, anyways.
I don't care how you play football, you will be conditioned.
That's right. You are going to be incredibly fit. Incredibly fit. Can't kick the ball for shit and have no concept of tactics or spatial awareness or anything of the sort, but god damn it, you are gonna be fucked.
You will run. Yeah, you will. Yeah. All right. So I was looking at this quote. I mean, the team in its current constellation finds it difficult to convert good chances, let alone bad ones, right?
Yeah.
It also has a problem of creating good chances. Well, so anyway, if I'm just following my thought train here, if we continue down this path the way we're going, we will need an exceptional striker who consistently can outperform the poor service he will get during the course of the season. That's it. If we change nothing, that's what we need. We need somebody that has got such a stupidly good conversion rate that with the poor service he's going to get, you know, we'll score every time. I'm not sure we can afford...
where is this person coming from?
More importantly, attract that level of striker. It always brings me back to that quote from Moneyball. Moneyball, probably the greatest sports movie that I enjoy. Where they're sitting around the table and he's like...
Mine's the Running Man.
Pardon?
Mine's the Running Man.
Well, the Running... I wasn't sure. I thought you said mine's Running Man. And I was like, well, what's running? Are you okay?
No, I'm not. But that has nothing to do with this at the moment.
So they said, we're talking about Giambi. He's being a great first baseman. They need to replace Giambi. And he's like, you know, if there was another Giambi, could we afford him? Well, no. Then what the fuck are you talking about, man? You know, it's like, what we need to do is replace. What we need to do is replace Fullkrug. Okay, well, if there was another striker like Fullkrug, could we afford him? No.
So why are we even bothering about? Man, it's we really like. It's kind of crazy that he still has his job right now. I guess not, considering our front office, right? But you got to wonder how long this rigidity is going to keep him employed here. Maybe he's just better suited for Bundesliga 2, just to be that, like, not quite relegated, but you're never really going to get promoted again. type of situation.
The only way this kind of rigidity works, like I said, is when you've got a team that can week in and week out enforce their idea of football on another team. And that's it. That's the only place that it works. Other than that, and even then, it's not going to work for you every game. But over a course of a season, it will. Which is why I think Werder, he put together a good system with Werder in the second league. And we had the skill level that surpassed the majority of our opponents.
Absolutely.
And over the course of a season, we get more points, right? Yep. But yeah, you move that same team into a higher level of competition.
Very different.
You don't. Yeah. It just doesn't work that way. You know, you have to have Bayern money. You have to have Dortmund money, you know, or a squad that has the ability to compete. Cause you're forever. You're not, how do you put it? You're not looking to create opportunities. You're looking to remain consistent. And so that means you're not going to take the pieces you have and make the most of them. You're going to take the pieces you have and make them do the thing you want them to do. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. So, we'll let Christian go get a drink of water or intravenous or whatever. I'm going to read a story from Ian. So this is a tell us your story segment. Again, so if you're listening to us on podcast, maybe you're not on the Discord. I put a message out every week. Hey, if you want to tell us about how you became a fan, we'd love to hear about it. It's great to share that with other people because being that most of us are North America supporters, everybody has a pretty unique way of having come to be a fan of Werder Bremen. So this week's story, last week was Condre 3K, which thank you very much for that. This week's story comes from King Ian. And by all means, we would love to have you share your story with us. So send that to me, either DM me on Discord. You can send it to me on Twitter at NotEasyGreen, or you can email it to me. NotEasyGreen2017@gmail.com. Ben, every week, what the fuck is wrong with you? The segment.
Me or you?
I guess I don't know. Maybe that's if you're a fan of Werder, maybe that's.
Oh, that's yeah. Oh no, that's fair. That's absolutely fair.
All right. So this one comes from King Ian. Born into a life of privilege and money. No, that's not. My grandmother on my dad's side was born in Danzig, which is now Gdansk in Poland. And as a result of World War II, her family moved west and mostly settled in West Germany. My grandmother made it to Scotland, and that's where my dad was born before moving to Canada. Growing up, I was really into soccer, and I played poorly from the age of 5. I didn't really know much about European clubs beyond what Premier League stuff was on TV. I first went to Germany when I was 13 and got to learn about FC St. Pauli from my family in Hamburg, but without any real access, I didn't really latch on to them as my club. Thank God, right? Miracles. Everyday miracles.
You were saved.
Right? You know, Hamburg doesn't become... Yeah. Well done. Then, when I was in high school... I mean, could you imagine how much more you'd have to hate King Ian if he was
a... Oh, God. Jesus Christ. He dodged a bullet with that one.
So then when I was in high school, I heard about this exchange program that existed in BC, British Columbia, to send students to Germany and vice versa. I signed up and was accepted. The options were that I could get paired with someone from Bremen or someone from the Rhineland. My dad hoped I'd go to the Rhineland because we have some family around there, but ultimately I got assigned to a match in Bremen. So it sounds like he was forced to go to Bremen. Again, little miracles. Simon from Bremen came and lived with me and my family in the fall of 2002, and then in the spring of 2003, I went to Bremen for 3 months. When I found out I was going to Bremen, I also found out they had a soccer team and that there was even a Canadian on the team. I'm going to say this wrong. Paul
Stalteri. Ah, incredible fucking player. Good Toronto boy. Played for the Lynx as well. Woo! I got a couple game warrants from that dude. Fantastic player.
And I'm not sure the chef if we're getting to the part where he loses his virginity or not. It's
coming. Did Paul Stalteri take it?
Oh, this story's getting good. As Christian can attest, there was not a lot of access to the Bundesliga in Canada at the time, so I didn't know a heck of a lot before going there. While I was there, I got to go to a bunch of matches, losses to Hanover and Wolfsburg to start, but wins over Hertha and Schalke to round it off. I also got to go to HSV match. My cousins, who are St. Pauli supporters, wanted to take me to a match, and HSV were the only ones in town that weekend. Unfortunately, they beat Nuremberg 4-1. I also got to see the German national team play against Serbia and Canada, of all opponents. There was also an exhibition match at the Weserstadion for the police national team against, I think, Werder U23s. Once I returned from my exchange, I obviously continued to follow the club and have been back to Bremen 3 more times, but only being able to go to matches twice on those trips. I feel a lot closer to the club now than I have before, thanks to the podcast and the Discord. Makes it a lot easier to follow and connect over things with our community growing like it is. There it is.
It's delightful.
I don't think I have applause.
Nah, he doesn't deserve one. Tough shit, Ian. No applause.
What a pussy hole. What kind of horseshit is that?
Brilliant.
What's too funny is that, you know, I'm asking people to share their fan story, right? And so somebody does. They bear their soul.
Insulted.
They're a part of their personal life.
It's like touching. It's in depth.
So sorry, King Ian. And I guess now I have to say, if you send a story into us, we won't do that. We're doing this just because it was King Ian.
Just because of King Ian. We swear.
All right. We got a lot of questions this week, so we're going to get into that right quick here.
ESPN Plus Originals. The exclusive home of the complete 30 for 30 library. Exclusive articles and tools.
All right, Christian. So the they got rid of that now. So now it's like it's classic now.
Oh.
Yeah, they have
a new, I have to admit, I rarely watch it, so I have no clue.
All right, here we go. Got a lot of questions for you, Christian. So rapid fire them, I guess, as best we can. How much did the relegation change how Fritz and Baumann tolerate consecutive losses? Will they let that repeat?
Ooh.
And then, of course, they threw in, if the Oilers went a quarter of their season with nothing but straight losses, I doubt their coach has a job. Well, without getting too far into Yank talk, the Oilers did go a quarter of their season with losses, and they did fire their coach, and now they're doing just fine.
All that hockey talk got me fucking confused. I really don't even know at this point. It's hard to say. One would think that logically there would be a less tolerance for that. And yet we seem, problem is, like, every time we think there's a possibility he might go, he starts winning again. You know, and then it's like, well, no, he's doing what he's supposed to be doing. We can't exactly can his ass now. I really don't know at this point. I have no fucking clue. And I would love to say that the tolerance for this sort of shit is very low, but I think we'd have to be floating pretty close. Like, if we lose every single fucking game for the rest of this season, I think there's a distinct possibility that he might get canned. And I'm really non-committal to that because, once again, our front office is pretty shit.
Well, I think, I mean, what I'm looking at and projecting forward is, I don't know, I guess we're going to learn something this year. And I don't like the fact that we're going to have to learn something at the expense of possibly our team, you know, getting into real trouble here. But Fritz and Baumann stuck with his man, Kohfeldt, until the very last day when it was, and then he threw Thomas Schaaf under the bus to salvage a season, right?
Right.
Baumann's still
emotion
in charge.
Baumann
is still the guy in charge, you know, theoretically, and Fritz is supposed to be the man in charge now. Fritz says that he's not Baumann. Fritz says he's his own man, right?
Yeah, right.
Again, the question here is that if we continue on this trajectory, does Fritz, number one, have the authority and the balls to make a change if he wants to? Or secondly, is he actually different from Baumann, or is he going to carry on in the same, you know, vein and run this coach right until it is you know, if all of a sudden we get into a place where, like we were in 2021, where it's like, yeah, you got to win the last game of the season to guarantee that you're staying up.
Yeah.
You know, now all of a sudden it's like, holy crap, you know, pull the ripcord.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. We don't plan ahead very well is one thing. I don't think Fritz will make any choices until next season, which is sooner said. He doesn't think Verano will get canned until next season, which honestly, if it would likely happen under Fritz than Bauman. Do I think Fritz is his own man? Yeah, but not in like a great way. I think he's going to be making some fucking pretty stupid decisions. And I hope I'm wrong. I really hope I'm wrong. I'm hoping that he's been, and this is all fantasy fucking la la land here. Yeah. I hope that he's been just sort of a yes man for Bauman to get where he's at now. And then secretly underneath that, he's a fucking footballing genius. I don't believe that even fucking remotely.
Just another talent that Bauman has fostered within the Werder system.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Right. Next question, Christian. What sign could the universe offer to tell you that Werder is finally on the right path?
Winning. Winning consistently. That's pretty much it. You know, I would like to see that before everything else right now. Like a top 10 finish, but winning, you know, because winning will get you that top 10.
And I was going to go with, you know, a topless rider on a horse goes through the field at halftime. That was going to be my sign.
Yeah, that'd be good too. Can we have both?
Why make me choose?
Yeah, that's right.
All right, going into next week, who is your preferred midfield given the yellow card suspension to Leinen and Stay?
All right, hold on a second. I'm going to try and open up my other app. Can you still hear me right now?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. All right, let's take a look and see.
We can still hear you breathing. And now I can't. Are you gone?
No, I'm still here.
Yeah.
The fuck? That's so annoying. All right. My preferred. So Leinen and Stay are gone, right?
That's
right.
Yep.
And we usually do Leinen, Stay, and Schmid. Schmid will be back. So I want to see Kaida. I want to see Skelly. And who else do we have? I guess Schmid. I can't really like.
Schmid's in, no matter what.
He's in. Yeah, so I guess just play like Skelly and Kite alongside of him, but I don't know that that's necessarily going to happen. You know,
of course. Well, this is what you want, right? So you get to choose.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then
that.
I'm trying to think if like I might be forgetting another. I can't take a look at the fucking roster because this. Yeah, I'm forgetting Grob. I can't take a look at the roster in case I'm forgetting somebody right now. I don't think I am.
Grob is still the single greatest spelling mistake ever.
Absolutely wonderful. I don't think there's anybody else that I mean, I don't think we really have anybody else except for Grob. And I don't ever want to see him on the pitch. So I guess that's it. Yeah, that's my mid, I guess.
Okay, I think okay, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, and then like... Visor's
out too.
Oh, is he? Yeah, oh shit. So are we going to be playing? Do you think we'll play Agu and Demol?
Yeah,
I think so. We'll play? Yeah, that'd be kind of fun.
Well, I mean, unless superstar Opitz gets the left flank.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Les Miserables says we'll get Grob, Schmid, and Voltamada.
I figure it's going to be Grob, Schmid, and Bittencourt is my bet.
Yeah. Actually, that makes a lot of sense too. Unfortunately,
an old man with two midgets.
Woo! Let's go. Yeah,
do it up.
Perfect. I saw that movie. See, it's It's one of the few where the sequel's better than the original.
Old man and two midgets too.
Yeah.
Taking it to another level.
Stacked for love.
Wrinkles and stepladders.
Beginning an odd amount of like, I don't know why this keeps coming up on my Instagram feed, and I'm not even joking. But it's like this, but it's a lot of like, a lot of midgets. It's like midget OnlyFans stars keep showing up. And I'm starting to wonder if I'm developing a new desire. I'm like, now is this, did this exist before, or is this only happening because of marketing? Yeah, seriously. They say TikTok is poisonous. I don't know, man. Instagram with those dwarf ads.
Okay. All right. So next question. I would like to know what it's like in the green room prior to the show. So what do you do to get ready for a show?
not much. Pour water. Talking about
that online.
Maybe have pants on, maybe not. I mean, right now I'm vaguely have a bathrobe on. Pour myself some water. I like to go through my notes, because as you guys know, I like to prepare for the show. Yes, so many notes. Honestly, I literally am on my couch in my living room, as many people know. Yeah, water, exactly. By water, I mean PCP. I'll put a game on. Also, I'll try and find out what games are on, and I'll just play that in the background. So that way, when you and Sooner are babbling about whatever, I can watch the game.
Good's going on, yeah.
Yeah.
And for my part, I mostly just pour a drink of spiced rum on ice and grab a water, and away we go. The rest of this just kind of happens all on its own. Yeah. All right. What qualifies the next power hour?
Oh God. It's a terrible time to ask me. I don't even want to ever see alcohol for like ever again, but we both know that's not going to happen. I loathe to think about alcohol right now so much. I don't know. I'm sure we'll come up with some sort of excuse. I can't think of anything at the moment. Maybe if we do better than last year. What place did we come in last year? 13th?
Sure. I can't even remember.
So we got better than 13th. I'll even take 12.
Yeah, 13th. Yeah.
There you go. So 12. 12 or higher in the table.
Pretty sure we're not doing power hour. All right. Question. I want to know why Ben and Christian, along with Sooner and Ian, continue to donate their time just to entertain us and shine a light on our miserable fan lives.
No, I like miserable lives. Like personal lives as well are just as miserable as our fan lives.
It must be. You're here listening to us live.
Yeah, that's right. If you had loved ones, you wouldn't be spending this time with us. I don't know, man. There's something wrong with us. There's something wrong with all of us. Like, why do we dedicate our time, our love, our energy to a club that just beats us up every fucking week? Yeah. Every once in a while she treats us nice, which is why we stick around, but more often than not she just treats us like dog shit.
Yeah, we're into that.
Yeah, I'm kind of, especially if she's like 4 feet tall.
If there's a booty call, we're in. All right.
Yeah, that's right.
Christian, would you rather a vegan brunch with Marvin Dukes or an alcohol-free dinner with Christian Grob?
Oh, fuck. Oh, man. You know what? Grob is probably the nicer guy and probably actually, like, probably pretty lovely to spend time with, despite his lack of skills as a footballer. Dukes, on the other hand, is just an asshole. And I feel like no amount of drinking during that meal would make it even remotely pleasant. So I'm going to go Grob on this one. I mean, we just wouldn't have to talk. We just ignore the elephant in the room, which is football. So we won't talk about him or his skills. We can talk about a ton of other stuff. Sure, I'm sure he's like,
would I rather have Mervin Dukes or Christian Grob babysit my kid? I'll pick Grob. Thanks. Oh,
all day long. Yeah. Dukes would hand the kid a pair of matches and a gasoline tank.
After my kid nutmegs him spit and scores him. A goal or something.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe like spit on him and push him over and call him a pussy or something like that.
All right. Bet on it or against it. Werder will gain no more points until match day 34 against Bochum.
Yeah, sure. I'll bet on it.
Yuck.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not pleasant.
Bet on it or against it. If Ole flirts with relegation, we will move on from him.
I'm going to bet against it. Wow. Yeah, I don't, I think they'll, you know, band together. We got to show him that we support him. He's the man who got us up here. All that same horse shit that we always hear every fucking time. I don't think they're ready to kick him out quite yet. Unfortunately, they should be, but they won't.
All right. Well, that does it for our questions. Folks, if you want to send in questions for Christian here, by all means, again, DM them to me, whether it's on Discord, on Twitter, or you can email them to me and I'll add them to the show. Just make sure you get them in before we go live. Spivey just showed up. Time change was last week. I already did that. Probably. I don't know why you're showing up now. But let's get Sooner in. Sooner, get your ass in here.
Is a very, very good friend of mine.
Sooner, maggot, sooner.
It's a rig system.
Maggot, sooner.
Nobody can do it like sooner.
Nobody builds walls better than
sooner.
Nobody's better to people with disabilities than
sooner.
We'll totally accept the results if I win.
Sooner.
How's it going, guys? What's going on?
Or sorry, what it do?
She's going, bud. How about you? Going like the clappers.
Just calling in from his manufacturing plant there. What the hell? Right. It sounds like they're building cars behind you or something.
I just live on a very busy street. I like manufacturing plant better. It makes it sound like I'm pressing pills. You got a pill farm going in my house. Got to keep the fiends happy.
Yeah, so Sooner, if you can breathe heavily into your mic, just like Christian did, everybody would appreciate that.
I fucking hate you guys so much.
No, I mean, I've had my fair share of weird stuff going on with my mic, so you're not going to get any, any ribbon out of me.
Thank you for the respect, Sooner. Thank you.
No, what's going on? I was thinking about it when I heard that. I don't know. I should never give people ideas here in this group, but it's like eventually, like if we keep on losing like this, maybe I should just come on and make the beginning of my segment talking about how great it was to watch Werder win and how the reports that that Werder lost is, you know, just fake news and you know, we won in a very bigly way, and
it was a beautiful, beautiful game. With beautiful people, beautiful goals. Right.
Good people on both sides.
Right, exactly. You'd have to say that in the Augsburg game. That would really do it.
Oh, God. Oh, my God. I've been, you know, just kind of, it's been kind of a crazy. I had to wake up really early again today, the last couple of days, and then I've tried to work in a little bit of Wolfsburg preview in, which I'm glad I didn't do any of that before they announced that they fired Kovac, so I didn't have to, like, I didn't spend tons of time researching what they were going to do, what they were doing with him, because I mean that ended up being pretty useless.
It's a blank slate now. Yeah.
I will say though, I'm pretty pissed because they've been so bad for a long time and they waited until this, like, they couldn't have fired him like a month ago,
right? And now, yeah, or waited one more game. Just,
right.
Just
or just like waited. Yeah. Yeah. Oh God. I was waiting for it. I knew that they were, but they're bad. They should fire him. And they just kept on waiting and waiting. And now they fired him and we're going to get that first level of you know, new trainer bump that they're gonna get, and we're gonna have to play it. Oh my god.
Right. So you got a lot of sunshine and lollipops for us.
Should I keep on talking about Wolfsburg now? Is this the part where I should just keep doing that for a second?
Well, tell us what we're in for. Give us your lock.
Sure. Yeah. So there isn't a whole lot to necessarily talk about this time because, like I said, they've changed their trainer. We do lead the overall series record, as we do with many teams, because we used to be a very good team once upon a time. You know, the last set, this was a little bit surprising to me because in my time of being a Werder Bremen fan, I wouldn't have thought this, but it's the last seven games that Werder has played against Wolfsburg in the Weserstadion, they've won five of those. So they have, just in terms of historically, like, you know, recent history, a pretty good run of form against Wolfsburg at home. Wolfsburg, like I said, they have not been very good. So this season, they got off to a decent start. They won four of their first six games. And so since then, meaning since match day seven, which I think happened like in early October, they have two wins, seven draws, and 11 losses.
A real high-level opponent.
Right, exactly. I mean, it's kind of like what Hoffenheim was doing. You know, and it was hilarious how Hoffenheim was also kind of a team that had not really won too many games since between like when we had first played them and when we last played them. And my computer just crashed here for a second. I'll bring it back up here in a second. It has my copious notes on it. But
we were fortunate enough to give Hoffenheim a nice little boost, and I guess you were probably predicting that we're going to do the same thing for Wolfsburg.
Yeah, I guess so. Here, I mean, I'll breeze through the rest of this really quickly here. I mean, the main thing to talk about, I mean, the one player who I'm really kind of worried about with them is Jonas Wind. I mean, I guess he's kind of like their Dukes, I guess. So maybe I shouldn't be that worried about him. But he has 9 goals and 6 assists on the season. But almost all of that came in 2023. He hasn't been playing as well for them. I'll just, because we're running over on time here a little bit, and I do have something to say about this. So yeah, my lock is going to be, I actually went back and forth on this because I was like, I might pick Werder here because this, like, I feel like we've already seen it 3 or 4 times when, like, Werder's back's against the wall and they come home to the Weserstadion, they, like, play well. And it's a weird thing. Like I've mentioned before in some of my, like, talks about this team in the last month, it's like they're bad at, like, creating desperation. But when, like, desperation is actually happening, like, they actually respond pretty well to it overall, I think, under Werner.
Do you even 2021, bro?
No, in Werner.
Werner, sorry.
Yeah, so under Werner. Like,
do you even Holstein Kiel, bro, in the second league?
Like, they're good at, like, it's like whenever they're, like, you know, in 13th place or 12th place, and it doesn't really matter if they win or lose that much. Like, yeah, they don't do very well. But, like, when it's a game that they need to win, like when they first came up into the league last year, like, oh my god, we better, like, play well or else we're gonna get beat. Or, like, the Hair to Berlin game last year. It's like, oh, we better win this one because this is the one we have to win. I feel like not always, but usually they respond well to times of desperation. They're not good at making the desperation when there is no real desperation, manufacturing it, but they're good at they're decent at responding to it.
They should channel their fans. We're pretty bloody desperate.
Right. But I think that for me, one of the biggest things that I'm worried about in this game, on top of our inconsistent play and the personnel we're going to have available for the match, and I guess the guy who's at the helm making those decisions, is actually who they brought in. This is a guy who's I'm familiar with by name, but not so much by, like, what he's been able to do, because he's been at Southampton for the, like, since I've been following league. But Hasenhüttl is their new trainer, and this, I think, could be pretty problematic for us because. So I'm basing all this off of a Wikipedia search, which I think that MAGA Sooner, that's super super great way to do you know, research. But I looked at his Wikipedia page, and they did have some stuff about his style of play. And one of the things they said is he loves kind of like they call him the Alpine Klopp, because he loves gegenpressing, and he loves to win the ball back in the final third when they turn
brilliant.
It over. And Wolfsburg is actually, as a team, already pretty decent at that. They average 4.8 times per game that they win possession in the final third. That's sixth best in the league. So you're talking about a team that already does that pretty well, and now you're talking about bringing in a trainer who that is, again, according to Wikipedia, a kind of a big part of his strategy. And
don't say Wikipedia. Just own it, because okay. now people they won't have to listen to you. They'll just go to Wikipedia because that's where you get all your info from.
That's true. I think Wolfsburg is going to get the new trainer bump. I think that we are wrecked in terms of who we can play in the midfield and in defense.
Yeah, we're toast.
I honestly might have considered going with Werder here, I'm going to go with Wolfsburg -1.5. And it's funny, it's the odds for this game changed very much from like when I looked at them this morning around 6:30 a.m. and around 2:30 p.m. Like they flipped crazy. Don't think I'm the only one who thinks this. Wolfsburg -1.5 gets you +340 on DraftKings. And I think Wolfsburg's going to get a pretty decisive win against Werder in 2 weeks. That's my lock.
You better lock it up. You lock it up.
Ooh, that's a big lock, all right. Of the day.
So, sunshine for everybody.
Yeah. Louise. It's great being a Werder supporter, isn't it?
Yeah, and well, I mean, not going to get any. And this is the real problem. It's not going to get any easier between now and. The next three games are all really hard, and then it's at Augsburg, Gladbach, at Leipzig, and Bochum at home. And I mean,
brilliant.
We might really have to sweat it out, and I would never have thought that a month and or like 5 months.
Yeah,
crazy,
right?
Coming off the back of victories against Munich. It's like I'm living in your nostrils, Christian.
I can't fucking win. Too quiet, too loud.
Quiet, can't hear you.
yeah, exactly. Paul said you asked for it. Too goddamn quiet, too fucking loud.
All right, let's move on to the contest sooner. Where are things at?
Oh, yeah, I am being a lazy fuck, and I have not opened up my app to see what. But I do know that I should say.
Why do I even have you guys on the show? Either of you, for crying.
I have no clue. Charm. OnlyFans content. I don't know.
In-depth comments about your different Instagram feeds and what's coming on them.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm very happy to say that my lock streak did break, so I think maybe I'm on the way path to being a bit more right in the future there. And also me and Cacophony, Paul, both picked the score of the game correctly, 2-1 for Union Berlin. Contre and Mark D also picked up points. A lot of people picked points for Werder, which that was probably something they regretted doing as they started watching the game. The top of the standings now has Paul Cacophony 42 at 17 points. Dustin's in second place with 15, and now Geppi's not even getting promoted. If this was the zweite Liga, he's Haas foul. Yep,
whoa. Better yet, Schalke, because isn't he from down that way? And most of his friends are Schalke fans.
Garbage town.
Geppi is where Geppi is now. So I'm in third. Geppi, LeChef, and Christian all have 13 in fourth place. Ian sits alone in seventh with 12. Dirt 13 and El Comandante and Matt Miller all have 11. Condre, Ben, and Spivey have 8. Lohena, Mark, and Strued are all tied for 14th with 7. Big Ben, Hair Doctor Tim, and Arun have 6. Jay has 5. Juan, Muhammad are tied for 21 in 21st place with 4 points. Brian has 3 in 23rd. And, who else brings up the bottom of our this is fun for everyone, I guess. Like there needs to be one every year who like joins the kick tip and then just never makes it. Boring Anna still looking to get off the mat there, 24th place.
You know how bad Werder Bremen is doing when Dustin is at the top of the table in our contest.
Right. He sees it.
The most cynical, pessimistic guy among us is almost winning the contest.
Enjoy my Sunday. Right. What kind of nonsense is that? Shai Halud saying, go enjoy your Sunday. I don't think you know me very well, my friend. Have you not been paying attention? I am hungover. There is nothing to enjoy here.
Maybe some tasty to eat at least.
What does his indoor game constitute? I see he's got a Dunisi on his
profile. Yeah.
Indoor game.
A bit of an indoor game going here, guys. All right. No, that's great. Sooner, appreciate you keeping us up to speed there. It looks as though I'm the guy in the Winnipeg Bus Depot still.
Love to hear it.
It's starting to get desperate here, I think.
Is there any other way to describe a Winnipeg Bus Depot?
All right. So as mentioned before, I am going to go into a bit of Werder history stuff here. Christian, Sooner, you guys don't have to stay on if you don't want to. We can definitely let you go try and recuperate there, Christian.
That's what I'm going to do.
All right. Honestly, really appreciate you having you on, and have yourself a good night. Sooner, if you're sticking around, that's great too. But yeah, you guys can sign off if you wish.
All right. Take care, all. Mwah. Besitos. See you guys next week, I think. Or is it 2 weeks from now? Whatever. I'll see you guys soon.
2 weeks, yeah. International week. Thank God. All right. So as mentioned before, I know this is going to prolong the show. We're usually done at about an hour 15. I want to take probably about 10 or 15 minutes going through. Like I said, I've got the book Lebenslang Grünen Weiß from Matthias way back in the day. And I just kind of want to start going through it and talking about some of the history of Werder Bremen, because I think it's important to build a little context. So if this isn't your speed, that's totally cool. Or I could just be talking to myself, and I'm perfectly fine with that as well. What I'm going to do is because the book is no longer in print, I'm going to post photos of the pages in the Discord under a specific channel. They are in German, but if you get the Google Translate app, you can just take the picture, open up the app. You can take the picture off of Discord. It'll translate it for you, which is what I'm going to be doing in order to get a little bit of a summary. Or if you are a German speaker, German reader, you can read it in its original, which should be nice if you haven't had access to the book. So either way, I think it should be good for Werder fans, and hopefully you can appreciate it. So the first chapter in the book is called The Curse of the Number One. And this was the first chapter, of course, is 1963 to 1964. And this would be the inaugural first season of the Bundesliga, and Werder were to be a part of it. So the push for a German league was headed up primarily by the national team coach, Sepp Herberger, and those that were involved in the Cologne football program. So the idea was that if they created a national league, they would be able to develop better football players for the national team. So teams like Werder were viewed as perhaps not reaching their full potential, as their opponents weren't able to push the players to their full capacity. They weren't really able to create competition that demanded a greater performance when playing against some of their local competition. So Germany's performance in the first World Cup following the advent of the Bundesliga gave them evidence that this might be the right direction to go. Cologne would be the first to begin professionalizing the Bundesliga by paying their players a wage that would allow them to focus fully on the sport, which is really interesting. Clubs like Werder faced immediate growing pains, and so some of the struggles that they had to get through, one of the first was that they needed to expand the stadium. So even though the stadium, I didn't know this, but the stadium was able back in the day to seat 40,000 people, believe that or not, but there were only 3,200 seats that would be available. And there was also a need for, you guessed it, floodlights. So beyond all these demands, the new league would bring Werder. They also needed to navigate the new waters of what made a professional status footballer. So, you know, kind of the question is like, what is the club actually responsible for? How do you retain the best players at Werder and attract the best players and so on? So the DFB put strict regulations on what clubs could pay players. This is super cool and interesting. And in the first Bundesliga season, players were only allowed to earn 1,200 Deutschmark, including all the bonuses. That was the maximum that you could make. But they did build some exceptions for like three or four of the top players in Germany. You know, but and it was only just a small amount more than the 1,200 limit. But yeah, it became apparent over the years that all kinds of little backroom dealings would be done in order to kind of disguise payments. So, you know, players would get, food or transportation or that sort of stuff in order to kind of, you know, inflate the 1,200 Deutschmarks that they were allotted to give. So one of the unintended consequences of the strict payment scheme was the difficulty in attracting talent to different clubs who wanted a specific player. So if you think about it, if Werder wanted a certain player, they couldn't offer more money. So they'd have to offer more of these kind of side deals in order to make it happen. So it was a real kind of wild west when the league first started. Now, only 9 days before the first game in the Bundesliga would kick off, Werder finished the installation of the floodlight masts. And there was apparently 20,000 people came to watch them finish the installation, turn on the lights, and play against Budapest. And Werder ended up being the winners in a 2-1 game. So the reason that this particular chapter from 1963 is titled The Cursed Number One, this is incredible, absolutely phenomenal, is because of the terrible luck that Werder faced that season keeping goalkeepers between the sticks. So at the very start of 1963, Werder would lose their starting goalkeeper in an incident that resulted in a triple fracture of his skull and a subsequent retirement from the game only a few months later. So Werder would go on that year to lose a total of 6 goalkeepers to different types of injuries, broken limbs, ripped muscles, but 6 goalkeepers in one season, which probably, I don't know if it is a record, but it probably is or should be a record. Werder's first Bundesliga game, although they won it, also kicked off the season in a horrid style. So 1963 is the year. The first game already probably started to show signs of the Werder that maybe we know today. So the first Bundesliga goal ever scored was pulled out of the back of a Werder net nearly 40 seconds after the game began. So the first the first season for Werder had both a lot of highs and lows. After they won their opening match against Dortmund, Werder went on to lose the next 5 matches, and then they won the Nord Derby against Hamburg. And then kind of at the end of the first half of the season, they rallied a few games together to finish the first half of the season in 6th place. Then starting the second half, they did an absolute swan dive again, losing multiple games that apparently were very winnable. Now, at the time, there was a lot of conversation about the unstable performances of Werder and it being linked to a very complex 4-2-4 tactic that was championed by the Hungarian national team and adopted and made popular by the Brazilians. So Werder's coach, Multhep, responded to the critique about the tactics being unstable. And you're going to love this quote. It almost sounds familiar. Quote, obviously not all of our Bundesliga footballers have fully understood their role within such a complicated system. The players don't understand what I want, they play wrong, and that's why they lose. End quote. There's a coach right there. So it's amazing. The system was designed as an all-out offensive assault, and the tactic that offered up to 6 attacking players at any given time. So the system of play, although not always successful, gave Werder fans a spectacle every single game. Werder would finish the first season in 10th place, a respectable mid-table position, Molthap, the manager, was quoted as saying their second year would be where the club would develop into a Bundesliga top club. So that's kind of the chapter as a whole. And what I'm going to include in the post on Discord within this first chapter, so I'm not going to read through all of it. It's going to be a nice, there's a couple of additional stories that appear in the first chapter that you can read on your own time. So one of the stories recreates that first goal that was scored in the Bundesliga. There's another nice article on Irvin Peeters and a look at Dieter Meier, who was one of Werder's brightest stars in the early days. Kind of a hat tip to Ayrton, a kind of a chunky striker. and there will be other pages that will kind of list the fixtures and the final table positions. There's a really nice batch of information there and some additional stories. So you're welcome to check that stuff out. And like I said, using the Google Translate app, you can find that. And if you're listening to the podcast and you're not a part of Discord, you can definitely find the link for that on our Linktree, linktree.ee/WerderNA. And you should be able to access the Discord. Even if you don't want to hang out there, you can definitely go and check out the post that I will try and get that. I'll try and get those on there later on, either today or tomorrow. So that's going to do it for us. Thanks again to Christian. Happy birthday, Christian. you made it. And Sooner for joining us, the Sooner Lock, and how the contest is going. And thanks everybody for listening. Those of you that stayed on to hear the end of the show. Always appreciate it. We do this because you guys are wonderful, if we're being completely honest. You guys make this easy. Even though we do razz each other and give each other a pretty hard time about stuff, it's honestly, it makes it fun. It's a great community to be a part of. So thanks so much for listening. Even those of you that don't join live, thanks for being a supporter of the podcast. We will catch you all not next week. It's International Week, so take the week off by all means. We will catch you in a couple of weeks. And we'll catch up then and have some fun. And take care, and we'll talk with you soon. Bye-bye.